know what, Tim?
Tell me.
I've been with you a long, long time, baby.
Yes, I know, Drew.
There's just something different these days.
What is it, my friend? Tell me, please. My heart is breaking.
Something I'm just feeling. I want to just share.
Please, tell me.
Four little words, Timmy.
Let me know.
Let you know right now.
The thrill is gone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Wow. I thought you were going to say, time for a raise.
Big shock to the system that was then,
woo!
Huh? Folks, Gail Scott is a senior faculty of the Enneagram Institute. She's been on our show one other time before. Today we begin a monthly series on the Enneagram. For thousands of years, spiritual teachers from many different traditions have reminded us of the richness of the human spirit and its potentials. But without real self-knowledge, it's not possible to awaken to the deeper truths of the soul or to sustain whatever degree of realization we have attained. Big words basically means sustainable change, I think.
Is that what Enneagram means?
No, it's not.
Okay,
what it means.
Just thought I'd ask.
Don't step on the intro, man.
Sorry.
Thrill is gone, baby. One of the most powerful tools for understanding ourselves, for Tim understanding himself, and for others, is the Enneagram, an ancient symbol of unity and diversity and change and transformation. And Gail Scott is back on the show. Gail, what's going on over there in Colorado?
How you doing, Drew? It's a beautiful day here in Colorado. It's sunny. It's breezy. I just came in from a nice hike in the mountains with my dogs. It's a great day.
Nice. Beautiful day in the neighborhood. Who said that, huh?
He was a nine, actually, who said that.
He's right into the Enneagram.
Really?
He was a nine.
He was always a ten to me, Mr. Rogers.
Stop it. He was always a ten to me. That's like a Billy Joel song. We've got to talk about this Enneagram, and I want to do this once a month for the next 7 months because I love it. It's one of the very few things that have come across my plate in the last, I don't know, decade that I've thought, you know what? Everybody needs to do this. Everybody needs to do this. And the problem is, you know, me just saying, hey, this is awesome, everyone try it, doesn't mean anything. So let's pull it apart a little bit. You know, how would you initially summarize the Enneagram to people? Did I just do a good job, or should there be more to it than that?
Oh, gosh, there's so much more to it. We could go on for days and days. But I guess in a nutshell, I would say it's an ancient system. It's been around for centuries. We don't actually know the original, or the origin of it, but we've traced it certainly back through ancient Greece and Egypt, classical Egypt. And it basically talks about the nine different soul types or, you know, ego types, manifestations that human beings come into the world with. And the one thing I love about the Enneagram most is that, and I've been studying it for, I don't know, about 25 years or more now, is that it seems to be objectively true. I've taught this all over the world. I've never found anyone who does not fit into, emanate from one of the nine soul types. And the reason this is a dynamic and growth and transformational developmental system is that once you understand your soul type or your Enneagram type, the opportunity for growth, psychospiritual growth, is absolutely limitless, but becomes very clear. Because when you know your type, you know so much about your inner workings and your ego structures, your basic fear and desire, what runs you, what your worldview is, and it shows you how you slip up.
Well, that's the thing I love the most. It revealed to me my... I got to remember this phrase. It revealed to me my ego... What is it again?
Fixation?
No, not my ego fixation. My ego agenda.
Oh, agenda, okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing I love. I really like it when... I don't like it when other people point it out to me, but when an inanimate object or thing says to you, dude, seriously, who are you kidding? This is who you really are. Don't stop trying to be this. Or the reason you're doing this is because you actually are a type. You know, it's funny. We don't ever want to be put into categories. None of us, especially in this day and age, we don't want to be categorized. No, you don't know me, right? That's the big phrase. But when we do get put into a category and it's accurate or fairly accurate, we then can kind of go, oh, wait a second. I don't have to take it as personally when I react this way because that's kind of just who I am. It's my personality type.
And, or it's easier because it is an inanimate object and you can freak out on it and no one will talk.
Yes, and I can get very angry at it too. Yeah, no.
And what we say is that the Enneagram doesn't put you in a box. What it does, though, is describes in excruciating detail the box that you're already in and shows you ways of getting out of it, ways of loosening those ego structures so that you have more freedom, more choice, more options, more ways of being in the world. And it's a way of waking up from the trance of our personality. The ego types really are 9 different trances of personality that keep us, you know, sort of, you know, walking around in a, in a programmed trance. And so we have the same reactions to things. We keep falling in the same potholes. We keep having the same crises and conflicts with people. And that's because of, you know, the box that we're already in.
So, all right, I'm just looking at Tim here. Tim, you
I'm
look like you really want to say something.
Ego agenda,
right?
Like, not everybody's going to know what that means. Like, I don't know what it means. So, what does that entail?
Okay, Gail.
Well, each type has a basic fear and a basic desire and a worldview. So there are 9 very distinct ego agendas. So your ego is telling, depending on what type you are, your ego is telling you all the time what you're trying to go toward, what you're trying to gain, what you're trying to become, what you're trying to look like, and what you're running from, what you're afraid of, what you fear the most. So that becomes your ego agenda, and it determines how you see the world, how you behave, how you respond and react to things, how you judge. It determines everything in your life,
okay.
And it's a trance.
Sorry, the other thing, too, is, you know, there's the Myers-Briggs, which... has the different, you know, ENFPJ and all that kind of stuff.
Myers-Briggs, is that a personality assessment thing?
Yeah, it's a personality assessment thing. Now, do the numbers cross over? Can you be a 1/5? Can you be a 9/2? Or are they very distinct?
No, they are distinct. And you come into this world as one type, one of 9 Enneagram personality types, which are ego types, which are also temperaments. And scientists know now that they've done enough infant studies to know that infants come into the world with 1 of 9 temperaments. And we know that these 9 temperaments or ways of seeing and being in the world correspond to the 9 Enneagram types. So as I said, and they're also finding out now, which is so interesting, there's a lot of neuroscience work being done on the Enneagram to show that there is something about brain chemistry that helps to determine which type you are. There's something, you know, bioenergetically and biochemically objective about the 9 types. But so, you know, you come into the world as one type, it's womb to tomb, you're born with that type, you die with that type. But the interesting thing is, and you know, where the work is that within each type, there are an infinite ways of expressing your type. So today we're going to talk a little bit about type 8. And as a type 8, you can express your 8-ness as being a heroic, you know, world leader, transformative, you know, leader of people. Or you can be an average 8, or you can be a neurotic 8, or a psychotic 8, or you can be all the way down the levels and be a destructive, you know, dangerous 8. But each type has within them this incredible spectrum of almost limitless ways of manifesting in the world. So no type is better or worse than any other type. But when you find out what type you are, then you can work at being a more healthy or realized expression of your type.
Okay. The one thing I don't enjoy or I don't like is the star sign stuff for 2 reasons. and I know this is not a star sign thing. That's why we're doing a series with you guys. If it was star sign stuff, we would have stayed with Sylvia Brown. Oh, wait, she's dead.
Did you see that coming?
So what I'm trying to get at here is the star sign stuff of prediction. You know, this is going to be this is going to happen to you this year. You will walk by a tree. You will see a cloud, and you will
hug the tree.
He will eat Chinese food at some time this year. I don't know, whatever. So the predictive stuff, not into that. The other thing is when someone says, what sign are you? You know, I'm always afraid to answer that because immediately you can see them going, oh, are we compatible or not? Do I like you or not? Just based on that reference.
So actually neither of those 2 things are applicable to the Enneagram. It's not predictive. It's not oracular. It doesn't have anything to do with what's going to happen to you when. What it talks about is the blueprint, really the hardwiring of your temperament, how you're hardwired to think and feel and react and value certain things. But again, it's infinitely variable within each person. But you'll find that whoever the other people in your tribe of type 1 or type 2 or whatever you are, at root, the hardwiring, the programming is the same. And then, of course, depending on your early life and influences and your family of origin, et cetera, it'll express in very different ways.
Tim, my engineer here, gee, this is the second week in a row we've had to talk about you. I'm getting a little annoyed, Tim.
Oh, you're not talking about me. I'm just asking a
question. No, I am talking about you.
All right.
Because this is a good point. Unfortunately, it means we have to talk about you to make this point. But
is this typical of his number?
No, stop. Tim is clinically diagnosed with depression.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So with brain chemistry and depression, does that have any impact? It doesn't have, I think what I heard you say, Gail, was it doesn't have an impact on changing your number, but the variable degrees within that number might change. Is that accurate?
Or do more numbers, or certain numbers more susceptible to depression? Because you said there was a brain chemistry thing involved here.
That's right. Certain numbers are more susceptible to...
Like mine. Mine. What am I again? We're still trying to figure... You and I are still trying to figure out what I am.
Right. So let's not talk about you, because we're not too clear about that.
Okay.
You're a hard patient.
Right, right.
But, no, it's true. All types are more or less prone to different DSM disorders, to different... personality disorders, to different, you know, forms and expressions of...
Sorry, what's DSM?
That's what therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists use to diagnose. It's a diagnostic thing that they use to tell you what kinds of personality disorders that you have.
Oh, okay, okay.
Depression being one of them. So, yes, certain types are more prone to... depression, although any type, you know, can be depressed if they're down the levels of, you know, of health, if they're under stress, et cetera.
So let's talk about some people that we know in the news, because I would like to just, again, help people, because this is kind of an abstract thing right now, but I'm hoping to clarify every aspect of the Enneagram over the next 7 months. Once a month, we're going to chat with Gail and try to figure out this Enneagram stuff. So let's take a personality type that we think we know a little bit, even though you never really know someone unless you're with them behind closed doors. Donald Trump. Let's go right there.
Well, okay, it's interesting that you choose him, because most people in the Enneagram field believe that he's a type 8, and we're going to be talking about type 8 today. Do you want to hear about the type 8?
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So now remember, a type 8 does not mean, you know, good or bad, healthy or unhealthy. You can be, you know, a very healthy exemplar of an 8 or, you know, not so much. But the type 8 is the type that we call the challenger. And we have several names for this. This is the leader, the boss, the provider, the entrepreneur, the maverick. And the thing about the 8s is that they're the most assertive and aggressive type in the Enneagram. They have a really decisive, like, dominating energy. And I might be a world leader. I might be a successful entrepreneur. I might be a soccer mom. But regardless, everyone knows, you know, who's the head of the house, who's in charge here. If I'm working at the factory, you know, down at the plant, I still have this energy that is very dominant and very... leader-like. We say that the eights are the natural leaders of the Enneagram. And why? Because they have everything it takes to be a leader, for better or for worse. They have a certain amount of self-confidence. They're very connected to their instinctual nature. So their attitude about the world is it's a jungle out there, so you have to be on guard all the time. But really, the eights like to take on challenges, and they like to give them, because it tests their will and power. The eights are all about my personal will and my power in my world. So they like to go up against people and the environment. They like to assert themselves. They like to, you know, overcome resistance and opposition. And generally you find them trying to force their will and manifest their vision of reality on things. So they look for challenges to feel more alive.
Okay, so as outsiders, we would look at someone like Donald Trump and make a judgment call, and we would say he is an unhealthy eight. Is that fair? Maybe contrast him being an eight with another person that we would see as an eight who we might all, I guess, admire from an outsider's point of view.
Sure. Well, we like to use Martin Luther King.
He's an eight?
Yes, he absolutely was an eight.
How can Martin Luther King and Donald Trump both be eights? That's whack.
Exactly. Okay, so that's the interesting point about this. So being an eight or being any type does not mean that you are a certain way in the world. You have to remember there's this enormous spectrum of you can be a saint who's an eight, as Mother Teresa was. Mother Teresa was an eight. Or you can be Saddam Hussein was also an eight.
Mother Teresa and Saddam Hussein are both in the same personality category.
That's right. So what you have to look at is that underneath that, there's a certain, as I said, a certain kind of blueprint or programming. And eights are about, it's really a mistake to try to think about one person and especially someone like Trump, who's so controversial, and think that everything about him is eight-ish. No, because if you don't like Trump, you're going to think, you know, all eights are terrible, and that's not the case. So remember, someone like, Mother Teresa is also an eight. So what do we know about Mother Teresa? She was all about empowerment. You know, she loved taking on challenges. She loved, you know, giving productive challenges. She was kind of a take-no-prisoners kind of nun. You know, she wasn't a wuss. She was like out there. She was like a general out in the field. And a lot of generals down through history, from, you know, Geronimo all the way down to a lot of the generals in, you know, in World War II and currently are eights because, as I said, they're the natural leaders. They like to take the initiative. They like to make things happen. They like to build things up. They're very constructive. Now, that's in the healthy levels. Down in the unhealthy levels, they like to tear things down. So, for instance, you know, when Saddam Hussein went down, he was taking the oil fields of, you know, Kuwait with him. But you have to remember that there's this huge spectrum of you know, very healthy to unhealthy.
It's Tim again. So would you say, like, you know, most presidents, you know, and world leaders, mm-hmm. up here in Canada, we call them prime ministers, are those pretty much all eights, or...?
Not necessarily, especially when you have elected systems of government. But I would say in so-called, you know, developing world countries where people come to power through military might, you know, and might makes right, clan leaders and, you know, military leaders of that sort, where it's about, you know, fighting and being the last person standing, then we see, you know, such as Saddam Hussein and many of the leaders of so-called third world countries who come up that way would be. But, you know, when we're voting for people. So in this country, I think the last type 8 president that we had was Johnson, LBJ. So he had all of this. It was a long time ago. We've actually had more 9 presidents in this country. But again, it's through an elective process. They don't have to fight their way to the top. So type 8s are very comfortable with power. Power is the name of the game for them, right? They look and sound like they have a handle on what's going on. So other people tend to follow them, and therefore they tend to rise, you know, to the top, especially, as I said, if there's some kind of, you know, might makes right.
Sounds like Steve Jobs, too.
No,
you're wrong, Tim.
Wow.
You're wrong.
I thought that would be exactly him. You know, he was kicked out of the business. He created this whole computer system. And
yeah, you have to look deeper than that. I think Jobs was a 4, but I'll talk about that when we get to the type 4.
Trying so hard to understand.
Well, I can give you some sort of typical type 8s that you might be familiar with, like John Wayne. Just embodies, the typical eight, that swagger, that, you know, get out of my way, that, coming through. And he was very charismatic. He had a lot of, natural tendencies. Fidel Castro, Frank Sinatra, and then, you know, a lot of present-day actors like Jack Nicholson and Clint Eastwood, right? And Russell Crowe, Denzel Washington, people like that, Susan Sarandon, Sean Penn, like they have this really sort of, you know, guts. These are body people, for, by the way. These are belly people. The eights, nines, and ones are in the belly center. And so they have this natural communication with their instinctual animal energies, and they just go for it, right? They just they're action oriented people. They want to make things happen. They want to get things done.
Yeah, you see, that makes sense to me, because like I'm a drama teacher, and one of the, you know, one of the things that we teach is like you got to act on instinct. It's almost like you got to act from the gut. So the fact that you've listed a whole bunch of actors really actually makes sense to me all of a sudden. But it's interesting, the list of people you've given, some are very self-centered, but a lot of the people you mentioned are also very outward, like, you know, Sarandon, Sean Penn, Denzel Washington. They're not just about themselves. They use them, their position actually to help others as well.
That's right, and that's a good point, because, again, this is all level sensitive to your health. But the less healthy you are as an eight, the more self-centered you're likely to be, the more it's going to be about creating your own empire, building your own, you know, power position. And for an eight, the more connected they are to something, you know, greater than themselves, something beyond their own personal agenda, and then they can harness that incredible instinctual energy and power and drive to make things happen on the world stage. Again, Mother Teresa, she was absolutely an eight, but she was so connected to that something greater than herself, and then that power, that indomitable will that she had, you know, changed the world in her sphere. Winston Churchill is another example.
Oh, I can see that.
I love him, yeah.
But
yeah.
Okay,
he's
so
a bit of a jerk, but I love him.
No, but put. I mean, obviously, the contrast between Mother Teresa and Saddam Hussein, right? That's just, you go, what? But when you put Churchill and Trump in the same category, you can see that. And again, this comes down to what. Look, this helps me say. This helps me not say, "Oh, you're an eight. Oh, I don't like you." Because it, as you've said, Gail, depends where you're at on that eight scale.
It's a spectrum, yeah.
That's right, yeah. So a couple of other world leaders who were eights, Mikhail Gorbachev. And you remember how, you know, assertive he was and aggressive. Also Golda Meir. And then artists, you know, there are artists in every type. Pablo Picasso, Ernest Hemingway, James Brown, Aretha Franklin. They're all eights. They have that earthy animal energy and that, you know, that go for it, you know, get out of my way nature. Keith Richards is another one. So we see lots of
he was a high eight.
Oh, till he got out of that tree.
Keith Richards, an eight.
Yeah, man, it makes perfect sense to me, man.
Shut up. It's so interesting that when, you know, this really does sort of help us understand the personality types a little bit more, but the reality is you won't really understand if you're that personality type until you take the quiz, right?
This is what I want to know, because I want to try this out.
Okay, so how do we do this? Because we're coming to the end of our time here. How do we do this? How do we do the quiz stuff?
Well, you can take an online test on our website, which is the Enneagram Institute. So it's www.enneagraminstitute.com. You can take what's called the READETI test, R-H-E-T-I. There are several tests that you can take. Some of them are free. Some of them cost, I don't know, $10 or $12. And then you'll get a nice some feedback from us with your three highest scores and some explanation of those three types. And you can pretty well determine from reading about the types which one, you know, rings your charms, which one really sounds like you. You don't have to do a whole lot of reading. Usually people identify themselves, recognize themselves pretty quickly when they start to read about their own type.
Well, the great thing about the Enneagram is, you know, you do the test, you do the free ones, check it out and see if it kind of works for you. It's just going to give you either or questions, which you're going to hate, but you're just going to have to trust it and pick one. And then it'll kind of give you an idea about who you are. And then there's so much to read about it. And that's the thing I love about this, the Enneagram Institute. You can unpackage this as much or as little as you want. You want to skim it and just get a little bit of affirmation as to, yeah, that's me. Or if you really want to hunker down into some some change principles, some reflection, some growth stuff. There is a ton of information on there to do this. So anyway,
yes, there is.
Okay. So listen, we got to fly here, Gail. Boy, that time just went so fast. Again, on the phone with Gail Scott. She is a senior faculty member of the Enneagram Institute, and the website is enneagraminstitute.com, and that's Enneagram. Enneagram
is the Greek word for nine, and gram means diagram. So this is a nine-pointed diagram.
Gail, thank you, and I look forward to our conversation next month.
Me too. Take care, Drew.
Bye, Gail.